Welcome to the SIVA Poultry Sounds podcast. In this podcast series, SIVA brings you the latest technical information about disease prevention, control, and management, and provides insight from poultry industry experts. Tune in to follow our content and be a poultry specialist.
Hi, poultry industry friends. We are here to one more episode of Tuning with the Experts. And today we are going to receive Guilherme Gonzalez, our colleague in SIVA, that's in charge of the veterinary services, our global veterinary service manager, and really working with bumboar disease, how to control into the field, and how really help our customers in this challenge. So, first of all, I would like to thank you to be here and to share with us your knowledge, your experience, and your opinions about bumboar disease.
You're welcome. Thank you, Marco, for the invitation.
Today, we are going to discuss a little bit about the global or the bumboar worldwide epidemiology. How is the circulation of the virus around the world? What's being detected in the last years by monitoring, survey, and this kind of search? So, we know that since at least 1957, when bumboar disease was first detected, was first described, we have the circulation of the bumboar virus around the world. Sometimes we have the perception that the pressure is a little bit higher. Sometimes we have the perception that the pressure is a bit lower, depending where we are or depending the time of the year, about several aspects. So to start our conversation, can you tell us, how do you perceive the bumboar challenge in the last 10 years?
Well, that's a very good question, because it depends on which area we're talking about. So the evolution of gambor in the last 10 years, we have seen a major trend, as we saw from the very beginning in the 70s and the 80s. We are seeing now an evolution of the virus. Like all viruses, they all evolve. And we have seen an evolution of the virus now that they tend to be less virulent in the sense as we knew gambro, the virus, the IVDV virus some years ago, is not that anymore, at least not everywhere as it was. Today we have a less symptomatic, less virulent presence of the virus. However, it's something that we could call a silent killer, because it's a virus that can reside in many, many cases, can reside in the farm, and can produce some subclinical signs. And we are seeing this this change right now. The virus is switching to a less spectacular, less pathogenic way, but it's still resident in the farm, and it's still present in the farm, yes.
Can we call it as a subclinical disease now, right now?
It is mostly, these new isolations are mostly subclinical, but I don't want to mix this with the old pathotype, what we call the virulent IVDVs or very virulent IVDVs. We have something that we call internally a new variant, especially in Europe, Eastern Europe. It's something which is, yes, it's subclinical. It's not what we used to have in Europe, the very virulent IVDV. Now it's less virulent, but somehow still dragging down the performance in the farm.
I know that you are leading a survey around the world to know better about the presence of the IBD virus in different countries. Can you share with us some outputs of this survey?
I can share some outputs of the survey. We have seen a very strong presence of the virulent strain in South America, Colombia, in Peru. It's a very massive presence of the virus. We have seen also presence, continuous presence of the new Chinese variant. Also in China, we know this variant for the last 3-4 years. We have seen also the variant in Southeast Asia. We continue to see very virulent gambar virus in India, for example. In the Middle East, we have sometimes a mixture of both. And in Europe, especially in Europe, we are seeing a switch from the old very virulent IVDV to this new variant IVDV, which was a big surprise for everyone. We didn't expect to have this in Europe.
And did you have any correlation between the presence of this virus and impact in the poultry production?
We have a correlation. We are now teaming up to find a calculation of the cost of having this subclinical form of the IVDV. And we have an estimation, it's a rough estimation that if you start comparing data, previous data with current data, especially in those producers or farms where they did not use any kind of PCR technique or isolation technique or detection of the virus, more correctly said, we are seeing that they are now realizing that there might be an impact in performance that they did not realize before, and they are now looking at it.
To help us understand how we conduct a survey and how the farmers can understand their challenge, the impact, I mean, how do you run a monitoring process? How do you run this survey to understand the challenge in the field in the, okay, in the different parts of the world?
So the way we organize for this kind of disease epidemiological studies or disease awareness studies is very simple. We select random farms in selected some random areas, and we usually recommend to get 8 samples, 8 bursas from randomly selected birds in the farm, and either send them to the lab like that or imprint them on an FTA card. This is how we usually try to detect any kind of virus, also the vaccine virus. It's what we recommend. We also recommend to pair this up with the use of serology. It's a recommendation. It's what our experience is, that you first take your PCR samples and you can later on add up some serologies to see what the impact of that virus could be, if it could be related to an increase in the titers or not.
Doing the correlation between what you saw as a challenge, what was you observed in the presence of the virus in the field. We know that in different countries, in different companies, we can have different levels of our challenge, or we can have something lower or something higher in terms of pressure. What do you observe as a result of the Bombor control when they adopt different ways of controlling it, different vaccination programs, different levels of biosecurity, and other aspects as well?
That's the million-dollar question. Which vaccination program and what you might expect to find? Well, for us, it's very clear. And we see a difference towards the detection rates, depending on the vaccination, depending on the vaccine, and depending on how the manufacturer of the vaccine looks like. So let's say, very roughly said, drinking water vaccination is not very efficient. So what we usually see is that most mistakes or most isolations seen in Europe belong to flocks where drinking water vaccination was applied. And that's very simple. If you understand, if you look at the whole picture, you have a flock where you vaccinate once or twice during the life of the birds, but you never cover up more than 70% of the flock. So you will always have one part of the flock which is not vaccinated, and where you will always find, by the use of a PCR technique, a foreign Gumboro strain which could come from the nearby areas or contamination. That's for drinking water vaccines. When you use another vaccination or another vaccination scheme, another vaccine, like for example, recombinant HVT vaccines, the recombinant HVT vaccines do not reside in the bursa. They replicate in the spleen, but the bursa is never invaded by the Marek virus. It's not the target for the virus. So in those flocks, what we see is that there is always a window, an open window for the foreign virus outside of the flock to invade the birds and replicate there. Even if you have no clinical symptoms, you have a high chance, at least after our studies, around 50% of the chance to find a foreign IBDV in the bursa. And then last but not least, when we are talking about immune complex, I would like to highlight that not all immune complexes are the same. They do not follow the same quality procedures. They are not produced in the same way with the same antibodies. So what we see in immune complex is that the way that the vaccine virus replicates in the bursa, it allows the bird to have a full, complete protection. Because when they replicate in the bursa, they block the bursa. So this allows the foreign virus to be isolated outside of the bursa. Even if they are in the farm, they cannot enter the bursa because the bursa has been already blocked by the immune complex. This is what we expect to see when we start running some vaccine take samples.
And what we call the stop the cycle, that for sure do impact in the population we are going to find
exactly
in the litter. In your experience, what's going to be the effect in a poultry house receiving cycle after cycle chicks vaccinated with Transmoon, that's our immune complex vaccine from SIVA?
What we expect to see is a very clear control upon time of the situation. Nonetheless, there might be a chance sometimes to retrieve still any foreign gumbovirus. This could happen, this is normal. And why we say that we control the picture, we control the whole situation, is because the virus, as I said before, it replicates in the bursa, it blocks the bursa. But sometimes, the pressure of the foreign virus is so high that you still tend to find sometimes the presence of another foreign virus, which is okay. It's only telling you there is pressure, there is a virus outside, you need to take care and you need to pay attention to how you vaccinate, how you produce the vaccine in the hatchery, how you vaccinate, what your biosecurity looks like. So it's just a biology, I would say.
Doing the correlation with the survey that was conducted, can we see difference in, for example, countries using more immune complex technology with Transmoon and countries using less or if a less lower percentage of flock vaccinated?
Yes, for sure. I can tell you we have very clear examples where we have a quite high market share, for example, in Spain. The situation in Spain is, if you compare it with other countries like France or like the UK, the situation is very, very different. In France, in the UK, in Germany, the presence of the gumbovirus is much higher than the presence of the gumbovirus in Spain. It doesn't mean we have no virus in Spain. We do have virus in Spain. But due to the structure of the veterinary care units, the structure of the industry in those countries, this unfortunately inhibited the countries to have a much clearer picture of the gumbovirus throughout the nations. So we see those countries where drinking water vaccination was massively used were very much inefficient in terms of stopping the gumbovirus cycle. However, on the contrary, in those countries where we have been already for more than 10 years, the picture looks completely different. We have seen that, yeah.
So I can assume that using Transmoon along the time, you're going to reduce the replication of the field virus and you are going to reduce as well the challenge, right? Does it mean that after a while, we can relax in the control, even maybe stop the Transmoon usage?
Every producer has its own policies, its own mechanism, its own way of doing things. When you stop the use of a vaccine, you always have a risk of coming back to the old situation. It's up to the producer to decide if they want to stop something that is working and come back to older times. If you stop the vaccination of Transmune, whatever the reason looks like, you might run again into old problems. You might come back to a situation where the virus is replicating again. It's still resident in the farm to a higher level. And you will arrive to a point, it will produce something called as an elevator effect. We see the same in coccidia sometimes. The amount, the shedding of the virus is so high that you arrive to a point that it's burning up so much that for the next flock, when you put the chicks in the farm, even if you vaccinate well, it will not hold the virus. So you might come back to a bad situation. Our recommendation is if you are using transmune and the situation is under control, why should you stop it? If you come back to older times, if you come back to an uncontrolled situation, the financial cost for the company will be much higher than what you might spare with another cheaper vaccine.
With that, I would like to thanks Guillermo to share all this experience and knowledge with us. We are going to have one more episode with Guillermo and how to diagnose bone-borne disease in another episode. So with that, we close this one. And again, thank you, Guillermo.
Thank you, Marco.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast. And don't forget to follow us so you can listen to our next episode.